This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 8, Rixty Minutes. Here's Aaron with the recap.
Bored of reality television, Rick hijacks a family TV so they can view interdimensional cable, featuring shows from across all spectrums of time, space, and reality. Improvisational hilarity ensues. Beth and Jerry would rather use this technology to view alternate dimensions where they are ostensibly happier and more successful, which leads to their further marital alienation. Summer realizes she's an unwanted child and plans on running away before Morty drops some interdimensional zen that helps her cope with the arbitrary and pointless nature of life. Finally, Beth and Jerry see their happier, more fully realized selves lament the fact that they never got together in those universes, which leads them to have yet another reconciliation.
Hey, Ron, what'd you think of this episode?
I mean, this, like, if people close their eyes, Rick and Morty fans close their eyes and think of Rick and Morty, this is probably one of the top three things they think about, like these interdimensional cable shows and how they're quote-unquote loose and improvisational feel, mm-hmm. and just how fun and crazy they are in the A plots, or I guess maybe the B plot, and how they, you know, but they're not just like, I think a quote unquote lesser show, using quote unquote a lot, I quote unquote myself saying a lesser show would probably just do the interdimensional cable and it'll just be like, you know what, let's give the writers a break, let's get Dan and Justin and everybody else into the booth and just say the craziest shit. And we'll just animate it and bada bing, bada boom. But what elevates it, I think, is the A or B plot, however you look at it, kind of grounding it and moving some of those relational things forward, like using this as a, you know, like it's also funny and, you know, ball fondlers and, you know, Lucky Charms and all that. But also there's some real pathos being generated by the possibilities of seeing your more successful other alternate selves. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I really like all those aspects of it. I think this feels like sort of the Justin Roiland hour or the Justin Roiland 22 minutes, which is a good thing. Like, I like what Justin brings to the show. That zaniness needs to be there for it to be Rick and Morty. And he really gets to shine in this one. You can tell, like, yeah, they're just in the booth making shit up.
There are
and
zero,
having fun.
Clearly zero wrong answers.
Yeah, some of the times when they pitch something, they like break into laughter and they leave it in. And I always love moments like that in shows. You know, it's the SNL kind of fly on the wall sort of thing. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff is great. I think most of these pitches are really funny. And I have my favorites. You want to talk about our favorites?
Sure. I think that my personal favorite is the kind of mashup of tricks and Lucky Charms.
Okay.
Where kids slice open the leprechaun, and it's mostly on the strength of just them going for broke on the execution. Like these stone face, like these kids, they're almost like deep in an addiction, squeezing out the Lucky Charms from his intestines and him. This shit he's saying as they're doing this, like, oh, Lord Jesus, I come to the light. I see demons. Oh, I see demons. It's really funny.
The line that gets me, and I agree, like, those are the best lines in that whole skit, the Strawberry Smiggles thing. But, like, the one that gets me for some reason is when he says, my entrails are out.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's...
Yeah, he's just
a good turn of phrase. I don't know.
He's just reporting the facts, folks. But yeah, I see demons. That's another one that's become really embedded in my household. Like anytime like someone's undergoing something painful or traumatic, it's a good way to break the tension.
What did this poor leprechaun do to deserve where he's headed?
Yeah, it's like maybe it's there's so many layers to it, like,
yeah,
you know, because he professes to believe in Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. Good Irish Catholic leprechaun, of course, mm-hmm. But maybe that's the thing, he's like this pre Christian pagan demi deity, and those they don't go to heaven. No, they get drugged down to the bad place for their blasphemous nature. I don't know. It's funny. It's funny.
Yeah. I love that skit. My other favorite, because that's really high up there, but my other favorite is Real Fake Doors. I just like the whole nature of this.
It's
like
a little bit of comedy torture, which I think you tend to enjoy. Yeah,
I do. Yeah, which is maybe why I like Justin's idea of comedy so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really love, and even Rick seems to get like really invested in it. Right? Mm-hmm, he's like, mm-hmm. "Holy shit, this is still the commercial, Morty."
Yeah. It's the comedic tension, Morty. It's brilliant. I mean, there's like, I don't know, there's so many, there's like little like glimpses of the Game of Thrones dimension where everyone's a dwarf actor except for Tyrion, but it looks like they're all still bummed out that he's the giant. Like, it's not like, haha, I'm the normal. It's like, no, they all hate
him. He's the abnormal one still.
Yeah, he's now that's really funny. I like Two Brothers, and almost exclusively because it's, I don't know, if you're a Rick and Morty fan and you like this particular episode and what they're doing on it, like, I cannot highly recommend Harmontown enough, because at least every other show, it's Dan and some other classically trained and very successful improv comic just doing some random shit, and it's really funny, and like hearing him go further and further out on this Two Brothers limb and just stack it up and try to keep bringing it back, and then try acknowledge all that in the title and kind of like giving up at the end.
Yes, that's my favorite part of it.
Yeah,
is when he finally just says it's just called Two Brothers.
Yeah, and it's then, like, he's got these like particular kind of like word whiskers or transitions where he's like, I've built up this thing, and wait till you see what's next. You don't even want to know. Like, it's just gone to the next. It's funny.
I mean, probably controversially, I don't actually like that pitch all that much. I think it's a little. It's not tempered by any sort of. It just feels almost like too low effort.
Mm-hmm.
That one feels like the one where they just said a bunch of shit, sent it over to the animators, and said, "Make this into something good."
Yeah.
I don't know, when it gets too improvisational, not as much of a fan.
There's other things that, like, I don't know if they were funny in the moment, because like when I think I first started watching Rick and Morty, I still lived in Indiana, and one thing about Indiana is it's like infrared, so you will never see like Democratic campaign commercials on the television. And when I moved to Ohio, like this thing where they have the Trump people.
Yeah.
I started experiencing the emotional whiplash, which is like watching a football game and seeing like a Hillary Clinton campaign commercial and then a Donald Trump one immediately after. And like the whiplash that you get from that is like captured by this. Like, you got the anti-Trump marriage people versus the pro-Trump marriage. And I thought that was kind of funny. And then there's a lot of like the turbulent juice, which is just like, what the fuck? But what makes it work is like everyone in universe is like acknowledging all this, like, you know,
right.
They can't all be winners. This is random interdimensional television cable.
Sex sells, Morty.
Yeah. Just kind of like, if you know, sometimes you feel like that way when you flip, if you got like a big cable package or satellite package, you just flipping through and you'll come across like a lumberjack competition.
Oh, I love those.
That's what I'm saying. Like, sometimes it's really amazing, or you'll see like a sumo like championship on ESPN Ocho, and it's like, fuck yeah, I'm in for this. But then you'll also see just the worst kind of like old 60s cop shows that are terrible, or you'll see just a really misguided Hallmark Channel movie or something. Oh. Or, you know, maybe I'm just saying the stuff I don't like. And it's like, this is what it captures, only to the nth degree.
Yeah. I like Ants Myers Johnson quite a bit too. That one, it's ridiculous, but all these are.
It's an alternate Earth dimension, clearly.
Seems like it.
So which kind of like, we can continue to talk about our favorite interdimensional cable skits, but I'd like to kind of transition into talking about the meat of the, you know, the show, the steak, not the sizzle, which is Beth and Jerry realizing that them living their best selves seems to be, at least in dimension C500A, to be completely incompatible with them being together. But it's almost like it's almost like a weird Fated Destiny thing. Of course, it's just one fucking dimension, so maybe I'm taking too much from this. But, like, the one dimension where they don't get together and they more or less have their idealized successful careers that they always pine for each other as the one that got away.
Right. It does come full circle by the end of the episode because you see them getting obsessed with who they could have been. But then they find out that who they could have been also wanted to be who they are now. And I think that's, in certain aspects of him. And I think that's, I don't know, the ending is a little saccharine on this one. It plays it out with a pop song and, like, they hug and then make out and everything's right in the world at the end. And
it's kind of like in Back to the Future, right? Like, what if Marty had gone back and fixed everything, gone back to the future, and everything's pretty much his dad's super successful and his mom's got money, but they're divorced because it turns out they couldn't stand each other.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird that no matter what kind of fuckery you do in the past that you – and I thought that's also – like, yeah, where is the – where's the Marty's parents and Back to the Future version of Beth and Jerry, where they were able to support and grow and help each other and become stronger through all this? And because,
well, if they
clearly
did that,
Jerry
wouldn't exist, and none of the, like, he would just disappear, right? Because the whole point was to get his parents back together.
Oh,
so, like, you couldn't really do that story
They stayed together long enough to have, like, Marty and his sister. It's just they split up afterwards because they realized that, like, oh, well, you're a science fiction nerd and I want to play tennis, you know, where.
Right.
I just wonder, like, there's got to be a future where Beth and Jerry were fully actualized. Like, he's the actor and the direct, and maybe even, like, with Beth, like, keeping him real, he doesn't go and write, what's that weekend that Dead Woman's Cats 2 or whatever it is.
Holy shit, yeah, Dead Cat
and
Lady
and maybe she doesn't, like, drink herself to sleep with her, you know, cages full of parrots. Like,
yeah.
I don't, but, you know, obviously maybe that's interdimensional cable for another day.
Yeah, could be. We have more seasons of the show to cover.
I thought it was also interesting about, like, Summer. There's some really good dialogue here about, like, the fact that when she's trying to go through all the different versions of herself, whenever she, like, fires up one of her parents' versions where they're successful, she doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And then anytime she finds herself to exist, they're always just doing something stupid like playing Yahtzee or Chutes and Ladders. I mean, that's... A lot of what is interesting about Rick and Morty is the fact that characters are forced to confront directly obvious truths that in most people's lives are just hypotheticals.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't need to have a family discussion about, like, how do we feel about the fact that mom and dad could have aborted you?
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't, and you don't talk about it. And, you know, that's just, but, like, here's, like, a child can pick up a pair of goggles and be like, oh, this is where I don't exist and look at my parents are so much more successful. And like, Beth's line of, like, well, what do you want me to say? I'm the version of your mother who didn't abort you, so you're welcome.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I think that's a perfect refutation.
Yeah, but it's still not exactly satisfying to hear from a child's point of view. So, you're just a version that resents me. Yeah, I get it.
Right. And also, you tack on the idea that Jerry maybe talked her out of this abortion and she really wanted it in the first place. And, like, it was just a moment of weakness that kept Summer in the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of stuff there. I think this episode really needed the episode before it, though, because in order to identify at all with Summer.
Yeah,
and you have to have the episode where she goes on an adventure with Rick.
Right.
And you have to have some characterization. So I think they knew what they were doing, similar to how, you know, they positioned the Rick potion number 9 season.
Yeah.
I think they knew what they were writing here when they wrote it.
I also like the, you know, like, Rick coming in and is like, oh, you guys are looking, you know, we're having real fun at the interdimensional cable. I see you guys are looking at your alternate lives and bummed that you don't have it so good. Like, it would be kind of toxic to have access to this goggle technology, because if there's an infinite versions of you, that implies that there's an infinite versions of you that's better than you are now, because that's how infinity works. Like, half of infinity is still, guess what, motherfucker, infinity.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an infinity versions of you better than you, and I do feel like that's a human tendency to look at that rather than the infinity of versions where, oh, Jesus, I'm ants in my eyes, Jerry, and I'm on fire, and my life is literally hell. But, you know, and also the idea that, like, there is something interesting, too, about, like, this is the first time we start to look at, like, the Jerry side of the, like, Beth damage, that he points that kind of, like, Yeah, because he's kind of gloating about, oh, I could have been diving in piles of cocaine and fucking Kristen Stewart or whatever. Because apparently in the dimension that Jerry successfully, she's not gay. That's some interesting. Part didn't come out. Yeah. But she's like, he said something about the lies, like, oh, now that the tables have turned, we now know they're unturned. Like, some of us thought that they were unturned tables, like, kind of like, oh, you've always thought you could do better than me. And now in this universe where you could do better than me, I did better than you. I don't know. It's a lot of interesting pathos and the petty jealousy on display here.
For sure.
I'm going to move to Southwest and do something with turquoise, and whether or not that had something to do with meth or a gateway to it, that's pretty great. And then the perfect antidote is at the end of the episode where Morty says the flip side of this is, like, this is all arbitrary. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a million decisions that led up to you being born or not born, and to get gripped up about any particular one bouncing this way or that, like, you exist. You can derive some sort of a satisfaction and pleasure from that, or you can't.
Yeah.
And if you can, come in here and just watch television because nothing else matters. That's kind of an oddly life-affirming thing. And the fact that it's delivered by your brother who's talking about his moldering grave, like, it's really metal, but kind of, like, cool. And like I said in the episode synopsis, kind of like a Zen Buddhist monk reflection.
Right. And then as far as dimensions go in this episode, there's C-500A, which is kind of the one they experience where Jerry does better and Beth does better and Summer doesn't exist. But then there are too many to list on interdimensional cable.
Right.
I'm going to put a full list in the show notes, but I'm not going to go into it here. If you really, really care about this stuff, I guess go check it out.
Hamsters and Butt World's where it's at.
The moon, it comes crashing into Earth. And what do you do then? It's two brothers and they're gonna. It's called Two Brothers. Two Brothers. It's just called Two Brothers.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, I'm not going back to the portal gun well. We're not opening up portals this time. We're strapping on interdimensional goggles to peer into dimension BM77 to access behind-the-scenes details, trivia, and spoilers for future episodes. Pretty clearly, listening to the Blu-rays for this, the Beth and Jerry plot, like, they even say it, like, that's Dan's side of the fence, and all the other crazy shit is Justin. And not that Dan doesn't get in and do improv with Justin, and not that Justin doesn't weigh in on the character stuff, but, like, this is kind of like the show at its most dichotomous, it seems like. And how, like, they're just, I really like these commentaries when they, you know, it's fun when they're crazy and they're talking about masturbating as 14-year-olds, but I really, really like it when they're dropping science about, like, how they use writer's techniques. Like, Morty's line to Rick about, oh, you know, this is seems like television from other dimensions has a looser feel, and Rick's like, yeah, it's got a real improvisational quality. It's like, that's a deliberate invitation from the audience to, like, we are inviting you onto this side. You are now with us on the joke. Like, this is all stupid and silly and arbitrary, and there's no goddamn good reason for it. And this is, we're us letting you know that, like, all the people are like, oh, they're just making this shit up. You're right.
Yeah.
You want to come in and make fun of it with us, or do you want to sit there and be you know, like Jerry says, look at where being smart gets you.
Yeah, it's sort of what, you know, Rick is saying throughout this whole episode to Beth and Jerry and Summer. Like, hey, we're having a blast over here. And you guys are worrying about this shit too much. Like, get on our side of the fence, you know? Come sit down on the couch and just enjoy this. Unless you get comfortable as an audience.
The concept of these goggles, are kind of an anathema to animation, like these POV shots, because they're just very it's very hard to do animation from a POV, especially this kind of animation where it's all kind of two-dimensional. That's why you don't see it very often, whereas in a live action, like, it's the easiest thing in the world to get a POV. It's just
point a camera.
You just let people know that it's a camera, and the camera's your eyeballs, and boom, there you go.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. When Dan was, like, riffing on the two brothers, when he said a Mexican armada, he kind of envisioned, like, Spanish galleon-style kind of things, but the storyboard went space, and they're like, fuck it, that's cool, too.
I also like Dan's commentary on... pretty insightful, pretty zen, like you were talking about with what Morty says at the end to Summer. He basically says, this can, any version of your reality, any of these universes that you're in, can be both your worst and best. Mm. And it's really up to you, because, you know, as Morty says, nobody belongs anywhere. You know, everybody's going to die. It's kind of that transient quality of life. And I thought Dan was pretty zen about it just in the commentary itself, too.
Yeah. There's also, like, I like that they're talking about the, I forget what the name of the show is, but the one where the kittens take over, Mrs. Sullivan, Weekend at Dead Lady's House too, that they had gotten pretty far in the process and realized that, like, this isn't really funny. This is just kind of like mashing up Weekend at Bernie's with, like, Cat Lady. And it's like, that made them feel very hacky, but then they had the clever idea of, like, oh, we'll just make it written and directed by Jerry Smith and set it in his universe to kind of, like, show how far he's fallen down the hack run. And I thought that's pretty funny to take your own hack idea that's like, maybe too indulgent, but like, oh, it's just our stupidest character that came up with it. And that way,
I feel like that's Dan's fraud complex at work.
Oh, of course.
Because I thought it was funny on the face, but once you get the animators involved,
that's
where it becomes funny to
me. I feel like at the animatics stage, it might have felt that way, but when the animator's just going for broke, like showing his woman her maggot mouth, and then
her head's falling off, and the cats,
and then you see the scene where he's fucking her, and like, what is the what must be the reality here?
Right.
Yeah, and then it's like, to me, it's like it's Jerry's movie doesn't save it. It just elevates it to, like, oh, of course, this would be the thing that he, you know, this would be his fucking Cloud Atlas that he risks his
and
his
it makes Dan as a human being okay with it.
Yeah. And I also like the idea that, like, in this universe, like, Jerry's getting all the Tom Hanks work, but you know, unlike Tom Hanks, who has this very almost Mr. Rogers like public image, which allows him to play Mr. fucking Rogers. You know, Jerry in his off time is just like hanging out with Leo DiCaprio and fucking models and doing piles of cocaine with Johnny Depp. I thought that was pretty, pretty funny too. Question.
Yeah.
Who watches Gazorpa Zorpfield?
I can't imagine anyone does.
Because is it like someone who just is aware of the Gazorpa Zorpfield, like, and they've made something based on, like, it's like they're culturally appropriating the Gazorpa Zorp
I mean, I guess the concept of interdimensional cable is not necessarily one where these channels are for the people in the dimension that they're made in.
Yeah.
I mean, because Rick can tune it in. Presumably other people can tune it in, perhaps. So maybe it's meant for the people in other dimensions.
No, it's interesting because, like, the movie The Last Samurai is not intended for Japanese audiences.
No.
It's intended for Western audiences that want to feel really fucking good about The Last Samurai being Tom Cruise, right? Uh-huh. So, like, is Gazorpa Zorpfield that kind of thing where, like, even a male or female Gazorpa Zorpian would be like, this is fucking offensive? Or is it from a different reality where Gazorpa Zorp is a lot more like Earth? So they are capable of having a Gazorpa Zorp field?
Well, I feel like it would be sort of the opposite, right? Like, the dimensions in which Garfield exists as a comic would be offended that the Gazorpa Zorp field existed, because Garfield's not a Gazorpa Zorpian. Garfield's a human. And the Gazorpa Zorpians would be like, yeah, right on. We get to identify with this now, you know? Tom Cruise came in and saved the Japanese as The Last Samurai.
Yeah,
Gazorpa Zorpfield came in and did an awesome show.
Right, yeah. I could see that.
It's a weird reversal, but...
Yeah. Is it appropriate... this is something... Maybe we're using too much of her powder in this episode. We should save some for later. But, like, one things I would like to talk about at some point is... in season 3, they do Morty's Mind Blowers as kind of like, I don't want to go to the interdimensional well too much. Bigger fan of Morty's Mind Blowers or Interdimensional Cable? Do you think they should alternate them from season to season?
I think I'm probably a bigger fan of Morty's Mind Blowers.
Really?
Yeah, because they're a little like micro stories, whereas this is just like completely, you know, improv.
Yeah,
and that's
you're
good.
Right.
It has its own flavor. It's just not as compelling to me.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Because like when I first saw Morty's Mind Blowers, I'm like, I don't like this as much as because it is. It's a different thing. It's like clearly they're trying like this is that the plug-in or replacement for that. But like, I don't know. The more I've watched it, the more like I do appreciate the heavy lifting that it does just for the characters of like kind of Rick and Morty. There's so many different ways this show can ignore or get around continuity. It's kind of like breathtaking from like, oh God, I'm up high and I'm looking at how scary this is, that they added another layer to that, like in season three. But I guess I hope if I hope they do both. I hope we continue to get Mind Blowers, although I feel like Mind Blowers might be the harder concept to do, because like if Rick makes development towards being a more complete person, or Morty becomes more of a self-actualized, I don't think he's going to grow up, but he's going to change as a character. Mm-hmm. The Morty's Mind Blowers can be problematic because it, like, that's just a maniacal thing to do. And it's also, it draws into question, like, how much agency Morty and his family can ever have.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, maybe that's not a problem for the show.
And I don't want to shit too much on Interdimensional Cable, because those things have, you know, the B-plot. Or really the A plot, whereas Interdimensional, the channels are the B plot in these, which really, you know, lend them a little bit more poignancy, a little bit more seriousness.
Oh, maybe they could bring them together and like the Council of Ricks has some kind of official entertainment, which is like imagine like a Twilight Zone. They have like a Rod Sterling version of Rick, and he says this is so they collect Morty's Mind Blowers from across the dimensions, and like these are the most mind blown Mortys.
And they just sort of flip through them like channels?
It's like it was like an episode of Cops where it's like, these are just real stories. Like, these are real Morty's Mind Blowers. It's just like you could have an interdimensional cable show where they're just flipping through the channels and one of them is like clearly Morty's Mind Blowers channel. And like maybe Rick's like super uncomfortable. Like, you know, how about those interdimensional goggles, guys?
Right. So I watched all the commentaries on this one. There's one with
I've watched
Robert
them all,
Kirkman.
But I did not, because I've had these DVDs for a long time, and I've watched the Scott Gimple and Robert Kirkman commentary. Mm-hmm. I've also professionally watched hundreds of hours of their creative output, and I felt like I was good. I felt like I was good on the second time through.
Yeah. I don't like saying bad things about people.
But you're gonna.
So I'm not going to talk about that commentary.
Okay.
What I will talk about are the deleted scenes.
Okay.
There are a few. There's one that they mention in the commentary with Dan and everybody about unrelatable Seinfeld. It's just kind of a throwaway thing they do. But it was one of the skits that didn't make it into the show.
Yeah.
But there's a few animatics with the full audio. And it's okay. It's not too bad.
That's the problem with a lot of like what I found in animation is a lot of stuff that's deleted scenes of animation are like, you know, probably reasons they were deleted. Because like if you take the time, you don't take the time to fully animate something that you don't want in the final. Like
absolutely.
That shit gets weeded out at storyboard. So like a lot of times the deleted scenes, they're interesting in this kind of like a what if or like a behind the scenes peek, but they don't often like you're like, oh wow, I can't believe they cut that shit, or like that was clearly better than pitch XYZ.
And then there's one called The Young and the Restful, which is just a bunch of people on life support and in a hospital, and the thing is they're all sleeping with each other and they've all got like babies with twin brothers and shit like that, and it's it's dumb.
Yeah.
Good job cutting that one, guys.
Hamster and butt dumb, because, you know.
Not as much fun. Mm. Like, you can be dumb, you just got to be fun with it, too.
I'm trying to think of, like, what happened on the hamster and butt world, because, I mean, the post-credit sequence raises more questions than it answers. Like, this isn't a symbiotic. It makes it pretty clear it's not a symbiotic relationship. Like, these are.
They have apartments and.
Yeah, they're
asses.
Almost like non-sentient creatures, and, like, what the fuck happened in this world? Because I don't know that hamsters and buttholes is actually a thing. Like, that's just like a vicious rumor people start about Richard Gere,
right?
Yeah. It's like,
it
sounds
gerbils
like
for him, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, a hamster, gerbil. Are they even different?
you got me. I don't know.
Is it one of those things where it's like Daddy Long Legs, where like if you're from a certain part of the world, Daddy Long Legs are these spiders. And if you're from a different part of the world, they're a different type of spider. It's not really a spider and you should call them Harvestmen. Like, yeah. Yeah. If maybe it's one of those things where it's like it's a hamster unless you put it in a butthole and then mm-hmm. it becomes a gerbil.
That sounds right.
Right. And mm-hmm. the hamsters wouldn't call themselves because they didn't get put in the buttholes. They voluntarily made homes out of them.
Yeah, so they're hamsters.
It'd be an insult to call them gerbils because that means you just got shoved in some random butthole.
Yeah, that is where they spend a lot of their time, though, and the stinger.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to me because now the whole family has kind of gone on an adventure, an interdimensional adventure
yeah,
with Rick. And it's like,
right.
you know, nothing crazy happened other than hamsters and butts. And
Rick looked like he was having fun, too.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe it's something that can be explored, like the you know, like or what's really what a mad genius scientist really wants is connection with his family.
We'll see. Then there is one slightly extended scene of Jerry getting Jerry running to Beth and confessing his love in this C500A dimension, and he's frozen and shattered by Rick,
mm-hmm.
who thinks like he's protecting his daughter,
right?
And everything else kind of plays out the same. Like they all come together at the end and they make out and they're like, hey, want to watch Ball Fondlers?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, Ball Fondlers. It's so funny because Ryan Ridley tried so desperately. There must have been a good story behind like how they came up with Ball Fondlers.
Yeah, they talked about like it started as Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's as far as it gets. And like apparently it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, if their arms are too short to fondle their own balls.
Uh-huh.
But like that's like they ran out of time to talk about it because like Ryan Ridley kept on saying, tell the story. And then like everybody else is yammering a mile a minute about whatever they're watching. And by the time we got to it, it's like, I don't know. But the end result is their final pitch is like, we want to go as far away from ball fondling as possible. Like the action should have nothing to do with balls or fondling, which fair enough. Like I like the roughly A-team kind of pastiche, mm-hmm. like 80s improv kind of, you know, episodic adventure action television with Crocodile Man and Mr. T with his haircut like a French poodle. That's a good direction to take. You already have Turbulent Juice. You don't need ball fondling and Turbulent Juice.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Ben Aaron from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at Bald Move. See you next time.